Thank you very much for coming in. I know you've been involved in the region process, but this last year, we weren't involved in that. So our process is probably a little new to you. I want to thank you for coming. Thank you for your interest in serving on the Board of Regents. We will you turn it over to you to do, you know, 5 minutes of opening comments, whatever you'd like to do, and then open it for council members to ask you questions, and then it'll be about 45 minutes, and then at the end you can obviously make any closing remarks you'd like. So I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good morning again, and thank you for the opportunity to be with you here and visit with you today. I'm honored for the invitation. I apologize a little if I sound a little rough. I'm on the back end of a cold, so please bear with me to grab some water or a lozenge or something. You've got my flyer, which really outlines my career path, my educational background, and some highlights from my career. So I don't want to spend time going into detail at this point with that, but of course, ready to answer any questions that you might have about that. Rather, what I'd like to do is talk to you about why I'm here today and what my motivation is to serve as a regent for the University of Minnesota. And really, my motivation to serve as a regent comes from my passion to serve students. And at this point in my career, it also comes from the ability to serve the state of Minnesota and in a way of giving back for the over three decades of successful career I've had in Minnesota in higher education and addressing difficult and critical issues. I've been very fortunate in my career. I've been all across the state. I've worked with almost every school district. I have been on literally every University of Minnesota campus. I've been on every Minnesota State College and University campus. And from doing that, and with my interactions across the state, I've been able to see really firsthand the really amazing accomplishments on each of these campuses, accomplishments of our students, our faculty and staff. But I've also seen the many challenges that exist as well. I think that you would agree with me when I say that the University of Minnesota and its multiple campuses are at a critical juncture today. And the Regents are facing really difficult questions that really get at the heart of research, student success, not just diversity, but inclusiveness, strategic partnerships, and of course, financial sustainability. And that the Regents really must work together, and with new leadership under President-designate Gabel, to respond. Therefore, that's why I'm excited to have a conversation with you this morning about how my experiences, my skills, my knowledge translate well to being an effective member of the governing board with a commitment to the University of Minnesota and our great state. So I thank you for inviting me here again today, and I look forward to having a conversation with you.
Thank you very much. I will start off the first question about the university's land grant mission. Mm-hmm. The University of Minnesota is obviously the state's land grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Mm-hmm. The land grant university, and really looking at the heritage of that, if you look at my educational background, you'll know I'm steeped in the traditions of what really began the land grant. On my side, what was then called home economics and the extension service. So I have a deep understanding of that. And that really translates throughout the state in that really immediate connection. People in the state have access to knowledge, education, practical day-to-day kind of assistance from the university, whether it's through extension or through its multiple campuses that serve a comprehensive mission within a region. so the other piece of that, of course, is the research piece. And as I have said in my application, and when the Discover mission statement came out bold, I think that captures so well the Discover nature of research, and then how do we apply that to life, to the quality of life, to economic development, and so many things that reach out, not just throughout the state of Minnesota, but really globally.
Council Member Menon.
And I think you touched a little bit on this in your opening statement, mentioning the critical juncture that we're at as an institution. What do you think are the most important aspects of crisis management?
I have some experience with crisis management at a couple different levels, institutionally, in my experience on a campus in leadership positions, and also from a system level perspective. Crisis management means high level communication, and communication throughout the organization and with the public. Crisis management requires transparency. If there are questions about an event, a risk, it's risk management. There needs to be ownership of what the issue is, and assurances that whatever the crisis presents is investigated, is looked at carefully, fully, thoroughly, and reported out. There's accountability that's tied to that, that reflects upon the organization and the organizational leadership. Examples of crises I've dealt with, certainly student accidents, student death, all the way to sexual harassment or class, judicial kind of things. Crisis management in the sense of how do you build a climate after, during and after an event, and then incident management, whether it's a physical incident to the campus structure, so student-based, structurally-based, financially-based. I go back to communications, transparency, accountability in working with that.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. Your introductory comments, you talked about your commitment to students. And tell us a little bit about how your doctoral thesis topic at Colorado State related to students.
For those of you who are not familiar with my doctoral dissertation. The date?
I'm familiar with my wife Lucy Taylor's doctoral thesis, not yours.
Let me put it in context of 1985, 1988. And my topic was, it was a study that looked at the effect of gender stereotyping in children's literature and the effect that may have on young children as we begin to expose them to different career options that they'll have as they get older. So part of my premise and discussion as I've worked with K-12 has always been that we need to start earlier. Well, this puts it starting very early, and what I found was that young children are impressionable at that age, but they can also change their views. So through through a control group, and it was an experimental study, I could show that the students came in with stereotypic perceptions, and then they left after a treatment of gender-neutral books, literature, to change that view. However, going back several months later, it's back. So back to the stereotypic view. So that, you know, looking at that today, I think the same concepts still apply, that young women need to be introduced to careers, that just like young men need to be introduced to a full span of careers, and that you can pursue any of these careers despite your gender. And we see that still today. We look at our engineering programs, look at medical. How do we begin to really get that gender balance within our professions? Then people will see themselves into the future, as those are really opportunities.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Davenport. In the state of Minnesota, we have two systems of higher education, the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System. Can you talk about the importance of working together across those two systems to almost create a vision for what higher education is going to be for the state of Minnesota, and how would you go about building that partnerships?
The question of, I think, intentional collaboration among partners is really important, especially right now when we're looking at resources and the scarcity of resources. My career in higher education has really been founded on collaboration. And looking for, and I've had successes in that, looking for shared vision, shared values, and really that what is possible if we bring all of our resources together, how that rises up. And because I have been in the other system, I think anyone looking into my background will see that I've had a very collaborative nature with the University of Minnesota, most recently with University of Minnesota Rochester, and that relationship with the community and the technical community college there, in Austin, Minnesota, with Cornell Institute and Riverland there. When I worked in government relations, our view was that this is public higher education. The state benefits greatly from public higher education as a whole. And it isn't the University of Minnesota versus Minnesota State or vice versa. It's how do we look at the value and the resources that are contributing to higher education performance? Are there areas where we can collaborate better and have quality services available? Unnecessary duplication. There may be some, but an example would be an effort we did here in Minneapolis, where Minneapolis Community and Technical College has great need. You look at the student population, great need for health services. But they can't afford to have a clinic, and why would we put a whole new clinic into the college there when, and as a result, they work with health services here at the University of Minnesota to provide those services with the student cost to offset that without having to build a whole another entity. That's one example. Research, our system looks to the University of Minnesota to be a third-party evaluator of programs, and we can do more of that, I think. But when we look across the state and the offerings and the access to higher education and really the wonderful resources Minnesota does have, how do we leverage that to build higher quality, better access, and really build that reputation of Minnesota as an education state?
Thank you. Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Davenport, for being here today. In terms of your own effectiveness and then also understanding the activities and duties of a region, what would you want to spend most of your time on?
In sense of maybe priorities, I think I have a running start at serving on a governing board because of my work for a governing board. directly working as a senior leader within the Minnesota State System with the Board of Trustees. I have an understanding of the types of needs and questions. I would have those needs and questions myself, too, learning more about the University of Minnesota. I would be looking at data. I would want to know, what are the facts, and I would want to know what are the different views. When there'll be tough decisions to be made, and there'll be hard decisions to be made, and so I would want to have the facts in front of me. I would like to hear perspectives on the views, and it's a board as a group. It's not individual members all acting on a board, but it's a board as a group. And so how do we come to decisions related? The other piece I would spend time on is the other piece of what I think has contributed to a successful career is my work with performance accountability. And so when you have the facts, you know where you're starting. And if you have the vision and you have the goals, you know what you want to see as a product or as a deliverable. And I've had a number of experiences and have done, I think, good work in the area of performance accountability so that we know what we're aiming for. We know, and the board isn't the executor of that. But how do we make it very clear and define what the expectations are so that the president and university leadership can go back and understand what the expectation is and then determine what they need to do to deliver on that outcome? So performance accountability data, critical analysis.
Councilmember Carlson.
Yes, thanks for clarifying that you've been on all the campuses of the University of Minnesota, as well as what we used to call MinSCU, now Minnesota State University. Going back to your comment to a previous question and your application, you talk about eliminating unnecessary duplication. Would you support a really bold move to close some of the 54 institutions, totally close, I'm talking about, in the Minnesota State University system to make more money for the flagship university, the only one in the state, research, U of M, and far fewer institutions?
That's a question that's been around for some time, and there's a lot of views and emotion around that question, and those of you who have seen in Minnesota, it's happened in Waseca.
With the U of M.
Right, and it's happened, attempted in the Minnesota State System with Anoka's. I wouldn't be prepared today to say I'm ready to close anything without doing the due diligence of more investigation, but that goes back to looking at the data. And that question is a very legitimate question to ask, in my view, when we look at the limited resources. And that's where I think going back to what's the issue around access? It's a different world today. Now that we have online learning and telecommunications and telemedicine and that, and what does that mean impact-wise on a community to close a campus, and with the U you've seen in Waseca, the impact there. But it's a valid question. I think it's one of those areas where it can't be addressed separately by separate systems. But there's an opportunity to bring the system leadership, the boards, whomever, together to say what are the questions we need to ask and how would we go about investigating those questions.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Davenport, welcome back to the Capitol.
Thank you. You too.
Can you just talk about what you see as the role of the legislature with regards to the University of Minnesota, and also as a regent, your responsibility or your role with relationships with the legislators and the administration?
Sure, thank you. So the role of the board and the role of the legislature, and it isn't just about money. I guess I would start first with that. It isn't just about money, although smaller continually amounts of money are allocated, appropriated to the university. But it's about, I think it goes back to bringing the resources of the state together to enable the research that needs to be done, to enable the students in Minnesota and those that wish to be in Minnesota, because most of the graduates, many of the graduates stay after, and we need that. How do we leverage all of this? But the legislature does need to, it's a mutual understanding that needs to take place between the regents, the leadership, and the legislature. About what goes on vision-wise, mission-wise, strategically, and then also operationally, because to be a regent or to be a legislature, you do not see the day-to-day impact that decisions make on functions such as student affairs or financial aid or some of the research decisions. As I've worked with the legislature on legislative initiatives here and at the federal level, and it's communication. I go back to it's communication. It's communicating. It's accountability. It's not just coming to request money or funds, but to say, and here's what we need. Here's what we'd like. There's a difference there. And if we had this, we'd be able to do that. And that's why it's important to the state. So it's communication. I think also from the legislature, I would want to hear, and kind of questions I ask is, what do you expect? What are your expectations of performance at the university? And how do we get there together? Because I believe we have shared vision, we have shared goals. We're in this because we care about our people, we care about Minnesota. So how do we work together? I was in this room when there is heavy debate about Chapter 136, which those of you who know, that's where the legislative intent to fund higher public higher education in the state is 67% to an individual's 33% to kind of in terms of what you contribute. The intent, I think, is still there. There's other complications along resources, and there's other competition among resources, healthcare, transportation, and that. But I think in the end of the day, everybody wants a stellar higher education system, a stellar University of Minnesota Research Institute that brings back the value. It's an investment with a huge return.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Davenport, I was reminded that I'm a graduate of medical school, and the only people who really call themselves doctors are PhDs. So.
I usually say, just call me Mary.
I noticed in your description that you at one time were involved in health career education. And you know, the health sciences are a significant, in fact, a major portion of the budget of the university. Medical school produces about 80% of the practicing physicians in this state. And yet the ranking of the medical school has gradually decreased over the last 20 years or so, especially. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on what things need to happen to improve that ranking of the medical school and the academic health center.
Yeah, it's very important to build up our medical research and education programs in the state, and knowing that we're ranked, I think, like 33 in the 30s, and we need to get up there. And I think the goal is higher than 14. I'm impressed by the work that's been done in the last several months with Fairview. And I have so much history, I think, in higher ed that I remember back in after the Minnesota-Minsky merger, when Fairview bought the university, it was kind of a period where mergers, alignments, all those kind of things were taking place. And so I watched some of that early on and wondered how that would work. The research piece and the productivity of that and the translation of that into application, I think, is where that new investment will be brought to bear and where it's really critically needed. When I've talked to individuals who are in the medical field and ask, why aren't you looking at the U, or why didn't you look at the U? Part of it, the reason they did not, was based on, well, I don't hear anything, I'm not seeing anything, or they're not seeing as much as they are from other places that are active. So maybe are we not sharing what our work is, the results of our work? We have a good reputation, and we have great partners. When we look at Fairview, when you look at Mayo Clinic, when you look at Hormel Institute, great partners in that. So I'm looking at that new agreement that came out and seeing that is a very critical piece to moving, not just to move the ranking up, because I think that's the byproduct of having a really good, solid, productive research and education program. And that's where I see with new leadership in health sciences and new leadership on the hospital side that it's a new day.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Dr. Davenport, for being with us this morning again. There was an earlier question about performance accountability. And back in 2013, the legislature developed accountability metrics for the University of Minnesota, but also for Minnesota State. The real intent of that was to provide accountability for our higher education institutions, but also that the legislature could extend some expectations that we would have upon our higher education institutions. When you look at accountability metrics, what would be important to you to be included in that metric scheme? What things would you like to see identified that the legislature would be evaluating our higher education institutions?
Mm-hmm. And a metric, I would say, probably ought to be different for the two systems, because the two systems are different. Looking at the University of Minnesota, I think it comes back to student success. Our students meeting their goal, which for most students is to graduate on time. And I think I've seen the university make changes there that have moved that meter forward in graduation. So how do you enhance that? It's difficult to move a high mark higher, but how do you enhance that by looking at where do maybe populations within that group need improvements? And dig into, rather than just an overall marker, what makes up that overall mark so that the areas that need more focus get more focus. And the way you get more focus is by putting an accountability measure there. And you tied some funding to it. So that's incentive. And it's not so, in my view, it's incentive around the urgency of an issue. That there are some things, Minnesota, we need to keep our people here. We need to attract new people into the state. We have a wonderful economy, a wonderful workforce that has many needs. We are a state of invention. So let's bring people in and make that accessible across populations, because diversity of ideas will contribute to the success of our state. So I think research productivity. I think when you look at a research institute, a land grant, there's other markers in terms of that give the global perspective or the global spotlight on a state. So the traditional things need to be included, I think, such as the publications, the research outcome. But then how do you modernize that and say application to what end? The so what of it? And with Minnesota being a so what kind of state, in the sense of we do have, look at 3M, you look at Medtronic, that's the so what. So how do we bring that all together, align that, and put some urgency through accountability on that? The general public will say tuition, the rising cost of tuition and student debt. There's a balancing act there. Students, I'm going back to the intent of education funding and how do you fund for inflation. There's that question, but also how do you keep tuition down while still supporting the students' needs, which are, it's a different world today than it was 30 years ago on what student needs are. And then how do we deliver the quality programs, because you don't want to reduce quality by cutting different areas. So how do you manage all those within a performance accountability? Can be done. It's not all monetarily driven, but it also creates a sense of urgency and a message back to the university or the Minnesota State system on what our priorities statewide.
Vice Chair Madsen.
Hello, Dr. Davenport. I appreciate your time today. During your opening remarks, you had mentioned that you had visited all the campuses and that there was some critical needs at some of the campuses that you were aware of, kind of a tipping point, mm-hmm. so to say. Could you give us a little bit more detail about what you think that is and how you as a regent could help address those situations?
Mm-hmm. The campuses are very unique and they have different missions. The Twin Cities is different than Duluth, different than Crookston, different than Morris. So the needs are different. If looking overarching, our facilities are in dire condition. You see it every time we look at a bonding bill, that there's more projects than can possibly be funded by the legislature. So that's a big area. We look at changing technology. There's risk management around technology, as you hear every day, the systems are getting hacked into and such, and that is terribly expensive. But that's an area where it isn't just the infrastructure, that but the learning that takes place online today is so much different, and it's high tech, and you can't just be a faculty member who takes their syllabus, plops it online, and teaches just like they've always taught. It's so much different. So there's a lot of investment that needs to take place there. The student support services, I think, is a challenge. The students, regardless of what kind of institution you are, you're seeing students with different preparation. And you're seeing students that maybe aren't in the traditional progression of higher education in the student population who have different needs. Many of our students, and I know within the university, students are working 1, 2, 3 jobs. So how do we create an environment where maybe, one, there's foundation funds to reduce that so that they don't have to work that many, jobs outside that take them away from their school and their studies. How do we, childcare, things like that, how do we assist with that? Well, we also know that there's some other kind of support services that we offer through, for example, the TRIO program, which the university utilizes, where there's just students that don't come from a tradition or a family background of higher education. It's different. They don't know what to do. They don't have that support system behind them to help guide them along the way. Those are some of the biggest challenges that I see right now. And emerging challenge programs as we have, how do you keep programs up to date when technology and the world of work is changing so rapidly and our equipment is 19 anything right now? And so that's where our partnerships come in. We need to have strong partnerships with our business community so that some of that stress can be facilitated and learning can be facilitated within a business or industry, taking students as interns, inviting the classroom to take place in a factory or a workplace or an engineering lab. So those are the biggest ones, I'd say.
Additional questions? Councilmember Farrell.
It's a very big time commitment. We, by all estimates, conservative or realistic. Tell us about your ability to give the time necessary to be a first-class regent.
Thank you, because now I gotta watch that because I did retire. I retired July 1. I had a wonderful career in higher education, and I left at a point where I've had a good full career, and I would like to give back in capacity to the state. I have time. I believe that my understanding and background in higher education lends some good head start to being a regent. I've worked directly with higher ed board, and so I understand that time because I put it in whether it's a community board, but I put it in on the other side, so I know the amount of preparation, and I know for the amount of preparation that individuals within the organization take to prepare for a board should know what's in front of them. Members should know, members should be prepared, members should read, and have knowledge, a deeper sense of knowledge, I think, about the issues that they're being. I have that time, and this is an enjoyable way in the sense that I love higher education. It's such a value to the state. It's such a value to individuals, but the community as a whole and the state as a whole.
That concludes our formal questions. Do you have any closing comments you'd like to make?
Again, I appreciate your invitation to be with you this morning. I hope that I maybe probably only scratched the surface, but gave you some insight into my experiences and my skills and knowledge and really my passion to be of service. A person doesn't necessarily need to be a product of the university to have a great affinity and joy and commitment to the University of Minnesota, because it touches all of us in so many ways, and I just would be a diligent and excited regent should you decide to move me forward.
Thank you very much. Thank you again for your interest and for joining us here today.